The 23rd Trump. 2008. Earth Current Era. Beep. 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 Susan reached out to hit the snooze, then turned over in the ensuing quiet. 9 minutes later. Beep. 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 Bam. Quiet. Crap. I'm still alive. And I have to go to work. 9 minutes later. Beep. Beep. Bam. Quiet. All right, already. I'll get up. Susan grumbled at the alarm. She sleepily walked into the kitchen, filled the whistling kettle, and went back to bed. Whee! Whee! All right, all right, all right. She stumbled back into the kitchen and got her coffee cup, perched the filter on top, added some coffee, 1.5 times the recommended amount. Strong, but not too strong. She filled the filter with water and put the pot back on the now turned off burner so it would not be so loud. She started doing her stretching exercises. Stretch arms up, stretch arms out, touch toes. Well, try to touch toes. Repeat. Tilt head back and forth. Those neck muscles were really tight. Must be the stress from work. Tilt, 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 tilt head side to side. Tilt, 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 tilt. Okay, the coffee filter needed more water. Fill it up. Deep knee bends. Wake up. Breathe in. Breathe out. Squat. Stand. Squat. Stand, squat, stand. Okay, check the water. Still some in the filter. What for breakfast? Who cares? Go to the bathroom. Shower. Brush teeth. Get dressed. Where's the cream? Oh, crap. I'm out. Have to drink the coffee black. Mundane thoughts crowding her sleepy mind, she went to the couch, coffee in her hand. She simply wasn't a morning person. That was a fact. The department head assigned this 8:30 a.m. class in order to torture me. That's clear, even with morning mind. Sip, sit back, get up, turn the TV on to the weather channel. No sound, strictly video. Raincoat? Umbrella? Even sleeping until 8, I hate morning. Having to get up at 6 is cruel. There's no reason for me to have to teach this section of Intro to American History to the science and math students anyway. There are lots of other people who could teach that class. She sipped her coffee and continued playing the grouchy morning tapes in her head. If talking to myself makes me crazy, so be it. My brain works well enough to earn a living. Susan was a specialist in the history of the lifestyles of the underclass in antiquity. It's not like she hid her interests when she applied for the job. They had seemed happy enough when she accepted. There still weren't that many women historians. The universities were still working on correcting the balance of history to herstory. She helped make the university look like they were trying to rectify the situation. It was about time, anyway. The problem was that history PhDs were still mainly awarded for figuring out the sequences of military events. That saved the committees the trouble of having to think too hard, or go look something up, or call someone from a different branch of learning in order to figure out if the candidate's research was deserving of a PhD. Look, she had explained to her committee when trying to convince them of the legitimacy of her dissertation topic, you can't really be confident that what you think you know is right unless you have independently derived supporting data from outside of the self-reinforcing feedback loops of the narrow discipline. As a girl, Susan had been lucky to go to a Montessori school, where the principal had insisted on having the faculty figure out ways to show the value of systems thinking in approaching the big problems of life on Earth. She had somehow managed to find the required 2 history faculty and a member of the psychology department who agreed to direct her research. Epistemology should not be confined to philosophers, hard scientists, and theologians, the psychologist had agreed. Back to reality. Okay, no rain. It shouldn't drop below 15°C. Long sleeves, no coat. A sweater will do. She finished her coffee, got up, went to the closet, got her sweater, grabbed her purse, and walked out the door of her apartment. She saw the bus at the end of the far block and picked up her pace to catch the 7:15. That would get her to the school in time to drop her briefcase in her office and get the notes for the morning lecture. She tried to keep to the facts according to the official text. She really tried. But even as a specialist in ancient history, she knew a little bit about U.S. history. And this book clearly overlooked some major points regarding the philosophy and motivations of the founding fathers. First of all, they completely left out the founding mothers. It was a fact presented as proven by every introductory psychology text that one of the main driving forces in human affairs is the desire, the need for species reproduction. It was obvious that in addition to wanting to hang on to their money instead of sending it off to King George, the founding fathers wanted to have their pick of the crop of potential mates for their descendants and a suitable place to raise families. That meant a place free from the outdated and hypocritical religions of the day. Look at where we are now in America, Susan had argued with a department head. All the history texts on the approved list act like the founding fathers wanted freedom of religion. No, they wanted freedom from religion. Do you really want me to teach this class? The department head had ignored her philosophical argument in favor of the pragmatic. You're the newest faculty member. Nobody else wants to teach it either. That didn't erase the fact that the whole foundation of academia made anyone with the slightest leaning toward interdisciplinary work presumed guilty of squishy thinking by the powers in charge. Like history could be independent of the workings of the human mind. Then there was that little deal with the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal. The teacher's version of the book explained that, quote, self-evident truth is that which is so obvious it does not need to be explained, unquote. Humph, Susan thought, that's bogus. Anyone familiar with the pre-Socratic philosophers from way back in the 4th century before Jesus knew there had been documented arguments about the nature of self-evident truth. If it was so obvious that all men, leaving the women out of the argument for the moment, were created equal, then why did they keep slaves? No, there are obvious problems with the way U.S. history is taught. Susan refused to hide the situation from her students. Freedom of religion is not anything the founding fathers wanted. No, the founding fathers wanted freedom from religion. Susan hoped that this distinction would sink in to some of the members of this class. Dr. Butler, what did you say? Piped up Joe, one of the students. Did you say they wanted freedom from religion? What does that mean? They were able to see that all of the contrary claims of the path to salvation and redemption were all unsupported by any self-evident facts. What do you mean, self-evident facts? Asked Jane. Professor Morger is not going to be happy with me for saying this, since Jeremy Bentham's little gem of a text is not on the reading list for this class. But I'm going to say it anyway. The printing press had made it impossible for all people to remain blissfully ignorant of the fact that there was no special divine favor for the Catholics over the Anglicans, or the Anglicans over the Lutherans, for example. Bentham was a genius, even if he got a few important things wrong. He described the mechanism by which the crown and the church kept the masses of people in bondage to the lie that they were sinners who deserved to be underlings. "Crown? What do you mean, crown?" piped up Marty. Susan shook her head. She realized that Marty tried to follow the lecture, sat in the front row, looked attentive, participated, asked questions. Susan reminded herself that at a state-funded school, there would be people from all backgrounds. The word crown was used in older texts to refer to the ones who wore them. She smiled at Marty. It was a genuine smile. Even if she was a grouch, she admired those who struggled to overcome their limiting backgrounds. "Oh, the kings and queens. You got it, Marty. What about the pilgrims? Weren't they truly and sincerely religious?" asked Jesus. Susan sighed. Bentham was a product of the Enlightenment. The power of the church had been absolute. There was no federal government to keep out competing groups of colonists. The founding fathers, like all politicians, had to compromise. Having people who wanted freedom of religion join together with those who wanted freedom from religion provided a better chance of winning the freedom each desired. Now we're stuck with the results of that compromise. "Well, that's different from what my high school history teacher taught," responded Jane. "Yeah, it's different from the book, too," noted Jim. He smiled. "Dr. Butler, I actually read the book for once, so I know." Susan smiled at Jim. "You see, Jim, when you read the book, it gives you a different viewpoint from the professor. Then you can make up your own mind." The bell rang. Well, the class was over. It was good that the students had argued with her, demonstrated interest. Maybe one of them would bother to actually try to read Bentham's little gem on the influence of religion on the temporal happiness of humans. It was tough going. The average 21st century engineering student would not have the language skills to decipher it readily, that was for sure. But even for the rest of them, a little controversy perked up the time in the classroom. She gathered up her notes and headed out of the door. Time to go check email. Butler's mind went right back to its habitual monologue. Oh, right. Yesterday I signed up for that internet dating service for intellectuals. The wrong guy is worse than no guy. No doubt about that. We have to be friends first. Maybe I'll get lucky. Susan stepped out of the classroom to head back to her office. "Susan, could you stop by my office, please?" Ken Morger, chair of the history department, had a strained smile pasted on his face. "Sure, Ken, I'll be there in about 15 minutes. Susan set her purse and notepad down on her desk and hit the space bar on her computer. It made the usual whirring noises and the screen lit up. "Message from the organizing committee of the Ancient Lifestyle Symposium. Please submit your abstract by tomorrow." Messages from two students who were sorry to miss the class this morning as they had food poisoning. Could she send the assignment? Lucky them, she thought, as she attached the file with the assignment. Next message. "Welcome to Smarter Partners. You have a flirt. Please click here to log into smarterpartners.com and view the flirt and see other potential dates." She clicked. There was no picture, but the name was interesting. Angel of Temperance. He must be familiar with the tarot. Very interesting. She herself had picked a name from the tarot major arcana, but Temperance? Why Temperance? She was always aggravated when that card came up when she did a spread for herself. She felt the cards were criticizing her. She had struggled with that. Why wasn't there a card for passion? Maybe he'll be boring. But she checked the negative thought. Really, this was amazing. She was shocked. The first response she got from Smarter Partners looked promising, scary even. There weren't that many men who knew the tarot, and most intellectuals weren't interested in fortune-telling. Well, she had nothing to lose. She clicked on the profile. 34-year-old multiracial male seeks woman 28 to 38 with a heart and mind. Okay if you are a little bit crazy. I'm used to it. I'm a clinical psychologist. Prefer someone who enjoys all types of music, cooking, books, ideas, and art. Might be nice to go out on the town once in a while, but main leisure activities other than those already listed include camping and nature photographer. Flexitarian eating habits. Social drinker. So he was the angel of temperance, but did not say anything about the tarot. Very interesting. Well, she had picked Starfool for her screen name, but had not listed anything about the tarot either. She really didn't have any hobbies at the moment, besides participating in the community block garden down the street. In the spring, she helped with the planning, and in the summer, she weeded and watered. Usually, the fall was too busy, but the other members delivered her share of the fall harvest items. She did cook most of her own food. She was no fan of TV dinners, even when they were the gourmet variety. Well, this had potential. She clicked reply. Yes, please send me a personal message. That was it. Now, what about that abstract for the Ancient Lifestyle Symposium? Amazing how a little shred of hope gave her such a lift. A second later, doubt began to rear its head, though. If I do the research, I'm going to bring it into the classroom. That will mean another fight with Morger. She didn't know if she was up to it. She rubbed her temples. Morger had become a real pain in the last few semesters. Susan had been doing fine until Morger decided to sit in on a lecture. I'd like to see what you're doing to get such favorable student evaluations, so that the other faculty could try out some of your techniques. She'd tried to explain. Ken, teaching skills of my level cannot be taught. It has nothing to do with my techniques. It has to do with my passion for the subject. Susan, there are always teachable concepts. Maybe you are unconsciously competent. We'll help you figure it out. Ken, thank you for that compliment. Susan had returned the pasty smile and excused herself to go work on the syllabus for the next semester's class. But Ken had been undeterred and showed up in her classroom the next week. Ken was outraged when he found out that Susan wasn't only teaching the facts of what had happened in the past. The classroom discussions were centered on where the members of the oppressed portions of society might have been able to make a difference in an outcome. Susan, this is not history or herstory. This is fantasy, pure and simple. Can't you leave that to the creative writing faculty? The students are not supposed to learn anything but the facts of how things were. They'd managed a semblance of peace since the discussion. The administration still gave lip service to academic freedom, after all. Susan sighed. Time to go see Ken. She got up, took her purse, and headed to the department head's office. Come in, Susan. Have a seat. Ken looked smug. Morning, Ken. What's up? I have grant money to develop a new American history class. That's not my specialty. Yes, right, of course. Ken was so smooth. But it seems you have some ideas about how to present the material that are more politically in favor these days. Understanding the contributions of all toward the pursuit of happiness shouldn't be a matter of politics. Susan, of course it shouldn't, but it has been. People are slow to change. We all have a personal obligation to the next generation to dig for what really happened every time we teach a class. Look, most of the professors have specific interests that take their time. When they get their books published, the next generation has a different attitude. Well, that means that knowledge is denied the light of day for a generation at a time. Well, here's your chance. It's probably for a class that runs at 8:30 3 days a week. It wasn't a secret that she was not a morning person. Ken smirked. How'd you guess? You're going to let me select the reading material, even if there is no existing textbook. Okay, you got it. The new class will be an option for the fall and spring semesters of next academic year. You'll have 10 months to put it together. Maybe you'll be able to turn the syllabus into your own textbook. I'm going to have them read Bentham, The Influence of Natural Religion on the Temporal Happiness of Mankind. Morger nodded. Good luck with that. It will stretch their minds. Susan paused, then continued. How much money do you have? How about a collaborator from another university? I'll see what I can do. The grant doesn't kick in until January. Back in her office, Susan mulled the situation. Maybe Ken wasn't incorrigible after all. He'd gotten her an opportunity to put her money where her mouth was. Clearly, he still wanted to aggravate her first morning class. But he was willing to use her to make the university look good, and that served her purposes. Damn, life is so complicated. The rest of the week went better. She taught the two other 8:30 a.m. classes, but she only had to hit the snooze twice each morning. The thought of meeting Angel of Temperance, whoever he was, gave her something to look forward to. They'd agreed to meet for dinner Friday. They both knew that all the dating sites advised coffee only for the first meeting, but somehow they felt a connection based on their screen names. After agreeing to meet, they had exchanged photos to help recognize each other. They both had dark, wavy hair and brown eyes. They were both of medium height, and neither was too slender. He knew she was a history professor. Friday, she left at 3 to get ready to travel to the Ethiopian restaurant that he had suggested. It was a couple of suburbs away. She'd been to an Ethiopian restaurant before, and they had that cool, spongy bread that was so much fun. They recognized each other at once. He was there waiting. That's how it should be, at least the first time, she thought as she approached the table. She decided to dress in her usual teaching style. The last thing she wanted was a stressful relationship where she had to worry about how she looked. Temperance stood up and greeted her with a warm, double-handed shake. She smiled. He had been sipping some red wine. They sat. The waiter came over and asked for her drink order. She decided to have some red wine, too. Star Fool and Angel of Temperance looked at each other. The waiter came and set the wine down and offered hot towels, set down the menus, and went off to tend some other customers. Hi. My name is Susan. He responded, mine is Michael. She laughed. The temperance card was said to be the Archangel Michael. How was the ride over? Not bad, she answered. She hated small talk, but that's where you had to start. She was hardly planning to ask who he voted for in the last election within the first 5 minutes of meeting. So you like doing nature photography? Yep, he answered. I've gotten some pretty good pictures. I don't have the patience to wait 3 weeks like the pros. So I tend to take pictures of rocks and plants and light effects. It can be realistic or impressionistic. I like to do both. Whatever Mother Nature offers. Susan considered. Well, I guess I am more of a farmer than a hunter-gatherer. I enjoy working in the community garden. I've spent too much time since grad school doing research and preparing lectures. The garden's been good for me. We all share the produce and the work. And if I want to take some time off, there are others to keep the weeds down. Michael smiled. She smiled back. I sound pretty boring. Michael smiled again. Then the waiter showed up. Are you ready to order? Oh, I forgot to look. We have a special for two with the four most popular dishes served on our traditional bread. It comes with a bowl of lentil soup for an appetizer and two glasses of spiced tea. Oh, and a special pastry for dessert. $22. Susan looked at Michael. Saves us the trouble of studying the menu. Righto, answered Michael. The waiter nodded and came back with the tea. So what else do you do with your time, Michael? Oh, not too much. I live in an apartment. I cook. Sometimes I go to see a movie. I like to read. Sci-fi, mostly. Short stories. How do you get involved with the tarot? There aren't too many guys who do tarot. At least I assume you know the tarot. Michael looked puzzled. Tarot? Susan rolled her eyeballs and looked back at Michael. Then she smiled. Angel of Temperance? Sending a flirt to Starfool? Very funny. Okay, okay, you blew my cover. Michael grinned. My mom was interested in the tarot. She was also a psychologist. She was interested in Jung's theories. She was always going on about archetypes, how everything we do is a resonance of something that others have done before. We think we're so unique and special, but we're caught in a time loop. I don't know if I go as far as my mom, but certainly understanding the fact that there are certain behavior patterns helps me to help my crazy clients. Susan thought about that for a minute. Well, there are certainly patterns in history, too. Really, I get so bored when my male colleagues act like they are doing such a service for humanity when they decipher one more cuneiform tablet or one more scroll that tells how many of the enemy's hands and heads were in the battle victory pile. I always ask the students to think about how seeing these patterns could have provided alternate outcomes. But patterns in history seem to be hard to see, even for professional historians. People are so caught up in their own current visions of reality. Michael laughed. Same problem we psychologists face, figuring out what reality the patient dwells in. Well, I guess I'm trying to apply something similar to what your mom talked about, but at a group level, and after the fact. The point being that the students will hopefully get the idea that they can apply the lessons of history to their own lives. But my boss is unhappy that I am deviating from the approved curriculum. Susan made air quotes at the word deviating. The soup arrived. Susan spooned some of the out of the bowl and inhaled the spicy fragrance. Sorry for burdening you with my tale of woe 5 minutes after we meet. Susan sighed. No worries. Michael offered a prayer. May all beings embrace transformation with grace. He lifted his spoon and swallowed the soup. She followed suit. Interesting, she thought. A prayer, but certainly not anything she'd ever heard before. She knew she'd been avoiding dealing with her spiritual life for too long. Bentham was apparently unaware of the kernels of spirituality at the heart of all religions, but she was not. She had been forced to become aware of her spiritual nature as self-preservation. Why she was so fiery-tempered was sometimes a mystery to her. She knew she needed to slow down and look around. Not that she was the only one. The whole society was so manic. They finished the soup, and the dinner platter arrived. A penny for your thoughts, said Michael. Oh, sorry. I must have spaced out, Susan replied. She was still smiling, though. She didn't think she'd smiled so much in a long time. Well, I think your little prayer made me realize that I need to really slow down and notice life going on around me. Yes, that's my professional specialty, Michael responded. I do treat some people who are really disturbed and dysfunctional, but most of my clients are type A's referred by their doctors after their second heart attacks. He smiled and looked a bit sad through the smile. My dad passed away after his third heart attack at age 45. I decided to learn from his mistakes. I love the spongy bread. She tore a piece off the bread base to the side of where the little piles of the different vegetable concoctions were. The food is delicious. What else could she say? Her parents had both been there for her, provided for her anyway, even if they've never understood her. Her dad was also a prof in biology. Her mom was a marketing specialist. She was good at what she did, but Susan found it to be a waste of valuable brain power to use it to find ways to secretly convince people who didn't need your product that they absolutely needed your product. Well, I guess I've spent my life trying to avoid becoming my mom. So do you have any photo trips scheduled? Sure, next weekend. Want to come along? I'm going to Sand Ridge State Forest. It's about a 2-hour drive. I was going to leave Saturday morning and come back Sunday night. Susan knew that they didn't even know each other's last names yet. They were going way faster than the safety guidelines of every dating site out there. She'd better check her cards. She smiled. Well, let me check my calendar. He knew what that meant. She'd pretty much told him she didn't have anything scheduled. Okay. You can let me know any time before 6 next Friday. That's when I'll be packing the car. Susan sipped her wine. Then she spiraled back to the earlier conversation. So, to get back to your mom's theory of archetypes... So what exactly is an archetype? I've been reading Jung, but some of his work is a bit difficult to grasp. Right. It's pretty advanced psychology. He never really cared to write for lay people like Freud did. I saw somewhere in the last book where he explained that an archetype is an instinct. She sipped her wine again and, looking at Michael, asked, "Have you read that?" I think that last book he wrote was where he caved in and tried to write for lay people. I never bothered with it. He laughed. I was a specialist. I had the background to understand his technical writings. Well, I decided to rephrase it for my own lay psychologist purposes. Susan pinched the last bit of the lentil stew with the last bit of the spongy bread and popped it into her mouth. Okay, I'll bite, Michael said. Let's hear it. Susan finished chewing. You're the first real psychologist I'm getting to try my definition out on. See what you think. Having an experience of being an archetype is the result of our genetically transmitted pattern recognition system functioning in the social realm. Michael now picked up his wine. Here's someone who was going to challenge him on his own turf when she walked a totally different kind of turf. He needed a moment to digest the surprise. Could you say that again, please? Sure. The archetype is the result of our genetically transmitted pattern recognition system functioning in the social realm. Right. Okay, I get that. I think you're onto something. You know that years ago, certain traditions in psychology claimed that humans did not have instincts. I think that position would be untenable now. But I like how you call it a genetically transmitted pattern recognition system. That avoids using the bad word. I see. Thanks. Well, that's why I am a fan of interdisciplinary work. There are certain things that discipline study hides from the disciples. Michael laughed. He sipped his wine. Anyway, the first time you said it, you said something else. You said something about being an archetype. That sounds more like what my mom says. I've always been more interested in practical techniques for behavior modification than the archetype stuff. He sipped his wine again and looked at Susan, eyebrows raised in a question. Yes, well, being an archetype. Without getting too personal, we can think that every man who becomes head of a family can become the archetype of the emperor when he's home with his wife and kids. He is then able to experience the emperor archetype in a personal way. Same for his wife. She becomes the empress. You following? Sure, that's straightforward enough. So the fact that a man and a woman get married carries with it certain predefined behavior patterns that have become genetically ingrained. That's why it's so hard to be different. Okay. And when they become parents, these patterns kick in with a vengeance. We're pre-programmed to protect our kids. Whatever idealistic programs we've had up to that point are now in conflict with the older biological programs. Yes, interesting. The tarot has the magician and the high priestess before the empress and the emperor, though. Maybe that's a warning against early marriage, or at least a prescription to learn to become a free actor as well as someone who can experience free will before having kids. Yeah, free will is great. Free will is a fact. But will isn't always translated into act. Michael smiled. You rhyme. But yeah, the world gets in the way sometimes, doesn't it? They finished their food while trying to figure out whether they'd read any of the same sci-fi books. She'd read Chalker's Well World series, and so had he. And of course, they'd both found and read Piers Anthony's Planet Tarot trilogy. They both thought it was a good night and that the relationship had potential. They both decided that it was really pointless to pretend that the other couldn't figure out who they were. So they exchanged cards, hugged, and bid each other good night. Beep, 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 off. 9 minutes of silence. Beep, 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 off. Okay, I'm getting up. I actually feel good. Maybe I'll go for a walk. Yes, I'll go for a walk. If I'm contemplating a camping trip where I'll be walking around looking for things to take pictures of, maybe it'd be good to get some different shoes. There was a shopping center about 45 minutes away by foot. Hopefully the hikes during the photo trip wouldn't be on concrete. Susan decided to take the bus to the mall and try out the new shoes on the way home. I'll probably spend too much for what I get, but that's the way it goes. She didn't care to spend all that time watching out for sales. All that did was create needs for things she didn't really need at all. Maybe I'll splurge, clear my mind. Stop for a pastry and coffee before I come home. Better get ready and get going. Okay, new shoes on my feet. Maybe it would be good to see what the cards have to say about the trip. And maybe I should have asked the cards before I bought the shoes. Why can't I get my personal life together even when I'm so competent as a historian? Well, that's not going to happen overnight. Maybe I know the answer. Maybe I don't need the cards to figure out whether I'm going. Susan had taken some time to learn to trust the tarot. She really used it more to understand the politics at the school than for any other purpose. It had given her a surprise message after 3 years at her first professor job. It was a much stronger, more coherent message than she usually was able to decipher. It was time to move on. You never could know for sure if you interpreted the messages of the cards in the most accurate way. Susan understood that was true of any information, interpretation, intuitive or analytical. But the semester after she left, her department head had been in a car accident, and her most aggravating colleague had replaced him. In retrospect, she considered that she had made a correct interpretation. Giving up 3 years toward tenure was better than giving up more. So she had looked around for a new job, and here she was in Chicagoland. The history department did not have a great reputation, but it was good to be in a big city. There'd be a large population of potential friends if she could get herself past the curse of the young professor to publish, publish, publish. And now, here she was, ready to ask the cards about the trip with Michael. Since there wasn't much to talk about with him yet, the photo stalking walk would be good. They could be quiet in case they came across some animal life. There would be a campfire at night. The cooking and camp setup tasks would provide opportunities to see how they felt together. Did he have an extra tent? She probably needed to decide before Friday if she didn't want to stay in his tent. Good luck getting a tent the day of the trip. Maybe Michael had a friend who would loan him one for her. That was one thing about the tarot cards. If you didn't have your question formulated properly, you wouldn't get clear answers. It was true that an experienced reader had a connection with the cards, and if the subconscious mind knew something that was important to get out to the personality, the cards would do so, regardless of the question asked. But in general, it was highly preferable to know exactly what you were asking. Susan got her Rider-Waite tarot deck. Then she got her light and shadow deck. Which one to use? The light and shadow was more subtle. Sometimes subtle was good. For the specific question of whether I am really going off into the wilderness with some dude I had dinner with only once, I better use the Rider-Waite. Anyway, that deck has a strong Angel of Temperance image. That one specifically said to be the Archangel Michael. She set the cards down and went to get some lemonade. Then she lit some incense. The monologue was going again. Maybe this new Michael isn't a clinical psychologist. Maybe he's a crazy person himself. Maybe his real personality is criminal and he's such a psychopath that he's able to act all warm and fuzzy and make me feel comfortable. Isn't that how con men operate? She had learned to trust her intuition by acting on her intuition. That was really the only way to know if the intuition was right, by acting on the trust. That entailed a certain number of mistakes, because sometimes the truth was hidden in plain sight. Ancient history was chock full of examples where the oracle had been misinterpreted. The cards were no different. Sometimes she didn't want to see what the cards had to say. Like when her grad school mentor had gotten sick. She wasn't ready for him to leave the earth plane. She had interpreted all the negative cards that came up using their New Age, excessively optimistic meanings. She was devastated when Joe had passed away. She hadn't said goodbye or thank you. She vowed to try never again to ignore the direct meanings of the cards. Here went nothing. She shuffled, she shuffled, she shuffled. That was the way she did it. She shuffled and then she cut the deck into three piles. From the second and third pile, she took the top cards and laid them face down. Then she shuffled again, shuffled and shuffled. She wanted to make sure the cards could find their places in the deck. There were people who claimed that the pictures actually moved after the spread was laid. But she was of the opinion that the cards had to find their order while still being shuffled. Her opinion required much less of a stretch of her rational belief system than the alternative. She laid out the remaining six cards she had decided to use. The original two cards were to help her meditate on the likely overall outcome of the trip from her point of view and from Michael's. The remaining six cards were also in pairs. The bottom pair was to represent the experience from the physical level, The middle row was to represent both mental and emotional aspects of the experience. The top row was spiritual aspects. She really didn't know what she meant by spiritual, but it seemed like a good idea. Maybe spiritual is the sum of everything else. Maybe it's the karmic cost. Who knows if there even is such a universal bookkeeper tracking karma? Oh well, no time to figure that out today. Susan dealt out the cards. Aloud, she told the cards, "Michael's experience is to be shown in the right column, mine on the left." The inner voice took back over. "Okay, here goes nothing." She turned over the top two cards, the overall experience cards. "For me, two of swords. Balanced forces. Two cross swords being held up by a blindfolded woman. For Michael, the major arcana, 13, death." Some of the symbolism came from the Middle Ages when memories of the Black Plague were still foremost on people's minds. 40% of the population of Europe lost their lives due to the bacteria spread by rats and fleas. But most modern tarot scholars encourage interpreting the death card to mean a major transformation in the personality or spirit. But that's what left me surprised when Joe was sick. Well, what's the alternative? Sometimes you have to have a little faith. Transformation it would be, and balanced forces. That doesn't sound like the death card means he's going to kill me. The physical level was very funny. Susan laughed out loud. Two of cups reversed for me and the nine hermit major arcana for Michael. Well, I guess we won't be having sex. What about the mental experience? Here goes. 17 for her. Sometimes the cards were really funny. Her star card. Well, this is a good omen. For Michael, the one magician card. That was the card of the person who had learned to control himself. It was the second most powerful card in the deck, after the Fool. Another good omen. Okay. Last two cards. Spiritual experience for her, the Queen of Cups. The card of the visionary who gets what she dreams. Emotional depth and maturity. Well, she felt like she could use all of those things that she could get. For Michael, the Four of Pentacles. That could be a card of stinginess or greed. Funny that it showed up in the spirit experience card. Well, maybe it's good to be greedy for spiritual experience. Maybe that's how I feel about myself at this point in my life. She rubbed her temples, sipped her lemonade. Okay, I'll go and ask him to find me a separate tent. She felt too attracted to him to want to cross her legs all night in the same tent. Hermit he'd be, and they'd wait to sip from each other's cups of love. They'd at least wait until after this trip. She was going to wait until Tuesday to call him. She studied his business card. Michael Mariposa. Dr. Michael Mariposa. Very funny. Spanish for butterfly. The winged angel of temperance. Very funny. How'd I ever get a chance to hang out with this butterfly? End of story.